and they openly deliberated in that meeting. In fact, they said, we're not supposed to be deliberating in here. And after they said that... Your Honor, my memory of it is, and I believe the law is, they're not supposed to be deliberating in there. And I believe that is indeed the standard.
There's
a variety of reasons, Your Honor, for which they can go into executive session to receive legal advice.
Well, okay. That's what it was.
In part, Your Honor. But after the legal advice ends, after Mr. Beery says, don't do this, Mr. Sandage, a lawyer, says, well, I'm going to vote to revoke it anyway, and not because it's legal.
Well, and they said, we can't do that in here.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. The chairman, Mr. Shimp, said, no, I've checked on this, and we can. And then he goes on to say, when we go out there to revoke, we're going to need 4 affirmative votes. And Mr. Plank says, I don't think we're supposed to be doing this in here. And the chairman says again, no, I've checked, and we can. And he was wrong. And they had no business doing that. Certainly no business doing that in the context of equating this with a whorehouse.
Any other questions?
One more question. Assume with me, Mr. Lee, that there was one legitimate basis for the Board of Adjustments revocation of the permit and one illegitimate reason. Would there be immunity for that decision?
Depends at the summary judgment stage if there are competing...
Under the circumstances we're at now.
Here, if the jury answered no, then I suggest the court could not reverse that jury finding because it's the province of the jury to assess the credibility and determine which evidence it will accept and reject. So assuming there was evidence going both ways at the trial level, I don't believe the appellate courts can disturb the jury verdict.
So then if there were one legitimate basis for the vote and 10 illegitimate bases for the vote, your answer would be the same?
It would, Your Honor.
Well, let me follow up on that a minute. We're trying to crack the test. If you have one legitimate reason and one illegitimate reason, doesn't that satisfy the test of that we set out in Chambers in terms of immunity?
It probably does at the summary judgment stage. At the summary judgment stage, I believe it does. And if in an interlocutory appeal, the trial court got it wrong and there were an interlocutory appeal...
Okay, let's assume there were summary judgments. Then would the burden shift to show that it was a mere pretext? Because I think we want situations where it's
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I believe in Chambers and in Wedowitz and in a host of federal cases, this court and the federal courts have said immunity is to be an objective standard and it's designed to protect all but those who knowingly violate the law. And in this, so in this court's own writings, I think this court has left open a place to remove immunity for those who knowingly violate the law.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
May it please the court. Yes, Your Honor.
This case got submitted to another case.
Yes, Your
Honor. Did you make any objections to the trial court that the liability can't be predicated on evidence or raising or those issues?
Again, I was not the trial counsel, but I do not believe the record, other than the raising of official immunity, which was raised, they did not. That was submitted. And again, where was the breach of a duty and where was the duty owed? Getting back to one question, though, that is in the record on Volume 6, page 165, Mr. Beery, and I think this is conclusive, he testifies, we had a couple of legal decisions to pass on. I mean, I had one theory of what the law was, and Mr. Boldrick had another, which was the other attorney. And the board, Mr. Boldrick was the attorney representing the aggrieved citizens. And the board apparently decided to side with Mr. Boldrick. I have no problem with that. Lawyers disagree all the time. But I felt it was in their discretion, and they had the right to make whatever decision they wanted to make. And that's what Mr. Beery.
He could have given the opposite advice, and he would have taken that decision.
As far as absolute immunity, Your Honor, again, I think that they should be entitled to that. And again, when the question was whether or not is there an animus, if you have the requirements of the permit and you meet A, B, and C, and you just arbitrarily and capriciously deny it, then you are, as a voting member, are acting outside the course and scope of your jurisdiction. But as in this case, where there is an argument that there was no 80 feet, there was not 80 foot of frontage.
That's exactly what the Court of Review held on certiorari on appeal.
No, Your Honor. There's a difference between, as the counsel was saying, there's a difference between abuse of discretion from a legal standpoint and saying something is acting illegally. Otherwise, every trial court, as I put in our brief, would be said to have acted illegally because they abused their discretion. They had a legal theory, and the Court of Appeals held for Mr. Champion.
The District Court and the Court of Appeals in the first appeal, in the first case,
yes,
had to have decided that the Board's decision was arbitrary and capricious and legal. No basis for
well, that it was an abuse of discretion, but that does not make it illegal. That makes it just as when the Court of Appeals will reverse a trial court based on an abuse of discretion, that doesn't make it an illegal act. It makes it wrong judgment. And that's what we try to point out in the brief. There's a difference between logically judging something and saying you did wrong. You could logically be wrong on a legal argument, but it doesn't make your judgment illegal.
If the court in that case held that the board's decision was arbitrary and capricious, would there then be personal liability for the board?
No, Your Honor. It would be not only arbitrary and capricious, but if you voted, it would be an illegal vote. But that's not an illegal vote if indeed you have an arguable premise, which they did in this case, a split zoning decision. And in fact, if you look at the Court of Appeals decision, they had to cite a Massachusetts case, not a Texas case. The law was not clear cut in the state of Texas, and they cited a Massachusetts case regarding split zoning as to why they were going to allow the building permit to issue.
If the executive session violated the open meeting, would the case be different?
Yes, it would, Your Honor, because that would be a violation. That would be a violation of the law.
And they seem to put forth a reason as to why the session was illegal.
The Court of Appeals has held consistently, as well as the trial court level, that it was not an illegal meeting. There was no vote taken. They had the right to meet with their attorney, and in fact, when you look at that executive session, they were talking about the options as to who is going to sue us or is anybody going to sue us. And that's why he said, you can go either way, Mr. Berry said, either way. And one other point I'd like to bring out is Section 101-106 very quickly, because that, you know, we're looking at the city of a taking. There's no longer been a taking. The very action that these individuals did, the city has been cleared of as far as Section 101-106, and that should be a bar in and of itself as to these individual members. Yes, Your Honor, as in Judge Littlejohn's order, the word official immunity, because there was a motion to strike some of the pleading in the final analysis, the city did plead official immunity, and as I mentioned in Judge Cadena's opinion in Baker versus Story, official immunity encompasses absolute immunity as well as qualified. So this is not a case like Davis versus City of San Antonio, where sovereign immunity was just not pled at all. Official immunity was pled, and it has two components. So yes, it was pled, and I believe it's before this court.
Once again, what was it about Judge Littlejohn's order that made absolute or sovereign immunity applicable here? I didn't understand.
That there was a motion to strike some of the pleadings they amended late within the 7 days, and the final order that she issued was everything was the other issues that were stricken out of the first amended answer except for sovereign immunity, official immunity, and condition precedent. Now, our argument is that official immunity encompasses both legislative and qualified, as Justice Cadena stated in Baker versus Story.
Okay, I understand Judge Littlejohn's order. Were the words absolute or sovereign immunity ever used in your client's pleadings?
No, official immunity was the only.
The answer is no?
No. As far as the argument in the JNOB, when I became involved in the case, that is what was argued prior to her granting the JNOB.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
The case is
All rise.